Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, everyone. This is Justine Rotolo, also known as Miss ADD, and I think we're going to have a really great program today. I'm so happy and proud to have my two sons with me, Chris, 26, and Mike, 22. And the music, as I've talked about before, that starts off the program was what's the word I'm looking for? Composed. Not written, but composed by my son, Mike, who is up at the Academy of Art University learning how to compose music. So before we get into the program, what I'd like to just remind all of you about is the, for those of you who are in Los Angeles, I run a support group on Wednesday nights through CHAD, Children and Adults with ADD, and it's really a powerful group. It starts at 7:30, goes to 9 o'clock. It's located at the Center for Learning Unlimited, 2785 Pacific Coast Highway. So for those of you who are in the area, I really would encourage you to come by. You will find a lot of love and acceptance, and just we also have a lot of fun and a lot of growth. So the other thing I wanted to talk a little bit about is my book, The Gift of ADD, ADD Land. Actually, the cover of my book was also designed by my son, Michael, who made the music. And I'm very proud of his artistic abilities, very creative, has the gift. And the book is on sale now. It's on Amazon for sale, and it's also on my website. So for those of you who would like to purchase it, that'd be great. Learn a little bit about the gift of ADD, which is really what we're going to spend time talking about today. And what I thought I'd do is start out with my older son, Chris. Want to say hi?
Hey.
Okay. And so Chris was diagnosed with ADHD when he was 9 years old. Do you remember that?
I thought it was earlier.
No, you were. I think you were nine.
Nine?
Yeah, nine. And you remember the first day you took Ritalin and the difference and how, And so you want to talk a little bit about what that was all like for you?
Yeah. I think when I was younger, it was actually kind of tough because it wasn't something that everybody knew about. And I was kind of trying to keep it under wraps. And
right.
I think it was so new, it was such a new thing when I was younger, and Ritalin was just coming on the market. And so it wasn't like, you know, now where people hear the word ADD and they know what it is.
Exactly, yeah. And so right away what we discovered was we had you tested, I remember, at the University of Pennsylvania.
Mm-hmm.
We went to the campus and walked around. I remember having a lot of fun that day with you.
That was cool.
And so they also determined through that testing that you had a math learning disability.
Mm-hmm.
So immediately, we were in South Jersey at the time. We started off with an IEP. We didn't even have a 504 because of the learning disability with math. And so Chris got, you know, basically the standard accommodations of preferential seating and extra time for tests, extra time for assignments. The math learning disability, the way they accommodated that was really through the goals on the IEP. But one of the things that I do remember is that you did very, very well in elementary school,
mm-hmm.
grade-wise. I mean, you just really excelled. And also, I think, were friends difficult for you back then, or was it easy?
No. It was always pretty easy.
Even when you were off the Ritalin?
I think especially when I was off.
Yeah, because you were very talkative. Yeah, yeah. But one of the things that we did go through, which I think was kind of difficult for you, was that oppositional defiant disorder. Now, Chris absolutely never got in trouble in school. It's very interesting. He really understood the difference, but when he came home, things could be difficult. And the home environment wasn't perfect. There was a lot of issues in the home environment. And this is one of the things when people are on Facebook or clients of mine that come in with their kids and their kids are, you know, diagnosed with oppositional defiant disorder, and they really want me to fix or give them some tools to help them with their kids. And here's what I say to a lot of parents is that I really need to work with you first, you and your husband, because I think, as Chris will tell you, if our family had been a better system, you probably would have been better.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Can you talk about that a little bit?
I think school was a whole different story because I really tried to keep it together while I was there, even though, you know, I was on meds, but I would come home and, you know, I'd kind of be coming down from the Ritalin and just needing the space to kind of unwind. And, you know, I think if you and Ken, who was my stepdad at the time, I think if you guys had been a little bit more, you know, understanding and just in a better place yourselves, I think you would have been, it would have been easier for me to come home and you guys kind of, you know, give me the space I needed and understand
right.
that I just, you know, couldn't do everything you wanted me to do right away when I was
No. there. No, absolutely. And I also was diagnosed at the same time with ADD as Chris was because I went, when I saw his symptoms, I realized that I had a lot of the same. And I was also depressed, and I didn't realize that. And so my depression did not help my ability to really deal with him in a productive way. Because my depression manifested itself with low frustration tolerance. And so I grew up in a family where if somebody told you to do something, you did it right away. And that kind of spills over. And then you have a child like Chris who was very creative, and he was very bright, extremely bright, and he was inquisitive, and he wanted questions. He had questions all the time, and it was very difficult for him, especially during when we had family time with movies and things like that, to just stay quiet. He used to like to jump around, and I didn't have a problem with that as much as my ex-husband had a huge problem with that. And so being codependent, I would want to help that situation, and so I would get in the mix of telling Chris to sit down, when in reality, I'm sorry, and we've talked about this before, I really did understand who you were and what you were going through, because that was me when I was a little kid. I couldn't sit still. I was jumping all over the place. So I think if we had had a situation where your stepdad could have been somebody that was able to hear us when we were talking, then it would have been an easier for you growing up
mm-hmm.
than it was.
Oh, yeah. No, 100%.
Yeah. Yeah. And so Chris went on to get accepted to like 7 universities in California. He's very bright. He graduated high school with a 3.5 and did well on his SATs. And immediately after getting into Long Beach State, he was there a week, he called us up and said that his leg that had been bothering him during the summer was really bothering him. And so to make a long story short, Chris ended up with a tumor growing out of his femur bone. And, of course, immediately we all thought that this was malignant. In fact, he sat in Children's Hospital and the head of bone oncology said to him, you know, I think we're going to start with 12 weeks of chemo and I'm going to try to save your leg. And it was just a horrible, horrible experience. And in the corner of the room was the surgeon who was looking at the films from the MRI and saying, you know, I really want to do a biopsy on this before we really call it malignancy, because he thought he saw something else. Well, thank God he did. And what had happened was Chris had had an aneurysmal bone cyst that actually grew out of his femur, and it ate the inside of the femur. So his bone had to be rebuilt with cadaver bone, and he has a titanium rod. So it was 7 hours worth of surgery, and it really threw him for a loop, and it was very difficult. He couldn't go back to school that semester. And before I go on to that, I just want to talk about something which I think would be helpful for parents that are listening, and that is you started smoking marijuana in eighth grade?
Maybe ninth.
Okay. And so the marijuana was a self-medicating
mm-hmm.
thing that helped with the symptoms of ADD, or was it more about your life in the family?
I think it was just my life.
Yeah.
I think it would help with anxiety.
Okay.
And depression.
Okay.
At the same time, which
and,
is kind of strange.
And so you felt like you could function better?
Yeah, I felt like I was just more myself.
Okay.
When I was
And you were also angry about all the meds that we had put you on through the years growing up, because we were trying all different medications, and you believed that we were trying to medicate behavior. And, you know, I agree with that at this point in time, that now that you're older, I see where you could have seen that. What we were trying to do was help you to get along better in life, but I'm not so sure that was the right way to do it. I don't know, you know, because there's plenty of parents out there who are listening that would probably say they've run the gamut too, as terms of medication, because as you know, it's not the same for everybody.
Exactly.
I mean, you know, because it's psychotropic and everybody's brain is different. Okay, so with the leg then, what happened was Chris really started to party, and he ended up drinking too much and doing a lot of partying, and I actually was responsible for putting him into an outpatient rehab, which probably wasn't the best idea because it didn't really help much at all.
Yeah.
Yeah. So what we came to find out years later, probably a year ago, right, a year and a half ago?
Like 2 years ago.
Was that Chris was diagnosed with bipolar 2, which is hypomania, and that's why we put that in the title. So along with ADHD, he also has bipolar. And so I would appreciate it if you'd talk a little bit about what that diagnosis felt like, and I remember you explaining to me how you wanted to embrace it and the concerns. What was that like?
It was actually really, it was just kind of bittersweet. I mean, my whole life I've been diagnosed with ADD and ODD and OCD and all the Ds. So it was good because medications were just not working for me. And I think it was because, well, I know it was because we were going about it the wrong way, because we were trying to medicate the wrong symptoms.
Right.
So when I found out that it was bipolar or bipolar 2, it was kind of relaxing, just because I finally figured out what it was so we could go forward from there. And yeah, I mean, it definitely was something I had to embrace. And I did because, you know, what else was I going to do? It was.
Well, but you know what, you say that, but I think that many people, when they get a diagnosis like that, completely fall apart.
Mm-hmm.
And they start going into deep depression and feeling sorry for themselves. But I think one time when you and I were in therapy together, you had said that part of the reason is because as you were growing up, I think I helped the both of you embrace ADD rather than, you know, feeling badly about it.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't a death sentence.
Right.
I actually did see your creative side and Mikey's at the same time. And so we kind of got excited. We laughed. I mean, the one thing we did do is we did laugh a lot because all three of us had OCD also.
Mm-hmm.
But that was difficult too, because for me, especially when I had the OCD, I obsessed a lot, which has disappeared now since the work I've done. But it was very difficult for me raising kids when I was obsessing about things. It was very hard. So I think that part of your ability to embrace the bipolar really stemmed from being raised in a family that you didn't, it wasn't presented to you, ADD, as something that was very negative. Of course, we didn't call it a gift back then because we hadn't gotten there yet, but we had some fun with it.
Yeah.
And we laughed about, you know, forgetting things, and I didn't get angry. Somebody else did, but I didn't get angry about those kind of things because I did them myself.
Right.
So how could I possibly get angry at you for that? So did you put together the fact that a lot of the drinking that you were doing was related to undiagnosed bipolar?
Yeah. I mean, it was all, for the most part, it was all self-medication.
Right.
I was just trying to find a way to stabilize myself, you know.
Right, because you were manic and
mm-hmm.
you really didn't understand
what
the manic.
When I was manic, I would drink to help with, you know, all the anxiety, and when I was depressed, I would drink to help with that.
Can you explain for people who are listening, because I don't have bipolar disorder, what is a manic episode?
It feels great, you're just having the time of your life, but it's all impulsivity. There's really even no reins on anything.
Do you talk fast?
It's almost like euphoria for a little bit. But I mean, it's not bipolar 1 where it happens super fast. It's like it can go on for weeks or months.
But you don't go into the deep, deep depression like you do with bipolar 1 where you want to commit suicide.
Uh-huh. No.
But you do have the dysthymic disorder along. So you have a chronic kind of depression where you feel kind of down periodically. So in terms of the mania, because I remember the night you had called me and you were talking real fast, and then I called you the next day and said, honey, are you aware of the fact that you had a manic episode? And you said, oh, my God, yes. And you were trying to find somebody to get. It was funny how we both kind of figured it out at the same time. And we actually, for everybody who's listening, what kicked off his manic episode is he had been to a psychiatrist and he had diagnosed him with dysthymic disorder and put him on Prozac for the OCD also, correct?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And it was the Prozac.
Yep.
Now, this is interesting, and this is something everybody should know. The Prozac kicked off at age 24 and a half, 25, the bipolar.
Yep.
When Chris was young, and we tried to get him onto antidepressants because he had a lot of fears. Do you remember?
Yeah.
The fears, like terrible fears, and we couldn't even get him to swim in the ocean. I had to tell him there was a net that went from Maine to Florida.
Yeah.
You got angry at me later on when you realized, but that's how I got you in.
Because
he's afraid of sharks, and he had a lot of fears growing up, and we tried to get him on to different antidepressants, and every single one we put him on, I have to tell this story, he became disinhibited. So what does that mean? I'll give you an example. Here's a story. So we were living in South Jersey, and there was a couple who lived next door to us who really liked Chris because he was a very likable kid, and they had younger kids, and they were going out, and they asked if Chris could babysit. And we said, sure, because we were going to be home, not a problem. And the next thing I know, Chris came home, and I get a phone call from them that he was actually shooting darts into their – was that right?
Yeah.
Darts into their wall. And the interesting thing about Chris is when he would get in trouble, when he wasn't on the antidepressant, he would accept responsibility and say, I'm really sorry. He was he was very apologetic. This time it was like, and I knew that something wasn't right and he had been on an antidepressant for a couple of weeks. So I called the psychiatrist who, said, oh, my God, you got to stop that medication right away. There's, something's not right. He's becoming disinhibited. And the other thing he did when he was little that is really actually funny as I look back on it now was when we had had a garage sale because my husband at the time lost one of his jobs. There was 9 out of 14 years that he lost. And we had a garage sale to kind of keep ourselves going so we could stay in the house. And the next thing I know, I look in the box and all the money's missing. And I'm saying, oh, my God, where's the money? And Chris is helping us look for it. When meanwhile, he had been put on another antidepressant. He was sending money away to buy Beanie Babies. The interesting thing is he handed Ken, his ex-stepfather, the envelope with the stamp on it for him to mail, like we wouldn't see the money in the envelope. And we realized at that point in time, I mean, we laugh about it now because it was, you can laugh now, but then it was not funny. It was actually the antidepressant. So the reason I'm telling these stories is for those of you who are getting that with your children and they're diagnosed oppositional defiant, it may be that when they get into their early 20s, there may be a diagnosis of bipolar 2. Because I think when you have a problem with the antidepressants in that way, I think it was pretty apparent to us later on what happened, right?
Oh, yeah.
So it was difficult for him. It was very, very difficult for Chris growing up with all the different kind of meds and, you know, different things that we tried, interventions when we lived in Ann Arbor. But you liked this. You went to a support group through the university for OCD.
That's right.
And
sorry, I forgot about that.
The control group had medication that was not your group.
Mm-hmm.
And your group just did some interventions.
Yeah.
You know, behavior modification or CBT, cognitive behavioral therapy. Did that help you at all? Because I don't remember back.
I don't know. I think maybe like while I was in the group, but I don't think it transferred to home.
To home.
Yeah.
I don't think so. Okay. So we did, but we did try a lot of different things because OCD was very hard, and you still struggle with that today, right?
Do we get paid for that group?
I don't remember.
Okay.
Why?
I'm just wondering.
No, I don't think we did. I think it was for like. In fact, they took us without us having to.
Pay. Oh, really?
Yeah. So yeah. No, we didn't get paid. So your OCD today? How is it?
It's okay.
Is it better?
It's definitely better.
Okay. And how did it used to manifest itself? Like in what way?
The way things were positioned on a table or how I would write things in class. All my letters had to be perfect and
wow.
Stuff like that.
That's exhausting.
Mm-hmm.
And rituals. I know you had rituals, right?
I mean, not really. It wasn't like...
When you were little, you had to touch things or you couldn't step on a crack?
Yeah, well, not the cracks. There were certain things that I needed, corners of doors I would touch and stuff like that. But
right.
It wasn't like coming in and flicking the light switch on
it. Right.
Yeah.
But did that kind of help you with the anxiety related to the OCD?
OCD? You mean that group?
No. Because, you know, people think that if they touch something a certain amount of time.
Oh, yeah, of course.
But well, it really heightens it.
Well, that's what OCD is all about, the control.
Right. Yeah. So what happened to Chris was he moved up to San Francisco. How many years ago was that?
Like four, three and a half. Yeah.
And he went back to school for a while, and then he was also a DJ for a little while.
Mm-hmm.
He did very well, and he dropped back out of school and has been working. In a restaurant, which is very interesting because I think sometimes some people with ADD would have a hard time with that because it's multitasking, like waiting on tables.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, but at the same time, you got to be able to talk to people. I feel like a lot of ADD people are good at, you know,
talking
to people and, yeah, that kind of stuff. I mean,
right.
You figure out the rest of the restaurant industry while you're working in it, but I think, you know, from the get-go, you have to have that creative sort of personality to work with people.
Right, right. And so now, in January, he wants to go back. He's going to go back to the two-year school at Berkeley and major, hopefully, in rhetoric.
Rhetoric, yep.
Because he wants to get into...
PR.
PR.
Yep.
And you're going to do writing.
Yep.
Which is a huge strength of mm-hmm. both him and his brother. They're both incredible writers and... I just am, I'm really proud of everything that you've accomplished because it hasn't been an easy life. But, you know, the interesting thing is that I truly believe that adversity can help you become a better person.
100%.
In so many ways. And I think that's what's really happened here. I mean, Chris and I had our rough patch together, and, you know, I recognize the fact for those of you who are listening, I try to tell parents of older teenagers and young adults this, is don't try to control them because you'll lose them, I can promise you. I talk a lot about trying to coach and instead of controlling, and it was very difficult, but I had to give that up, and I did, and we are in a much better place because of that. It just makes a lot of sense. If you think about it, your kids need to grow up and they need to be their own people. And if you're going to try to control them, especially when they're in high school and, you know, they're juniors and seniors in high school and you're trying to do everything for them, stop going to school and bring their books to them when they become juniors because it just you're not going to bring their books to college when they leave them home in the dorm room. I just really believe that if you try to coach them and talk to them instead of at them and engage them in, you know, different situations that you're trying to decide, they need to have a say in it. They really do. I know probably people would disagree, but I don't know, Chris, don't you think that's a better way to approach situations with kids that are teenagers and young adults?
Yeah, I mean, you can't do everything for your kids.
No.
Especially when they are ADD or, you know, any of this stuff. It doesn't help them at all.
Right, because I really think that, you know, my feeling is that I tried to make everything right for you and Mike, okay?
Yeah.
And one of the things that I wanted to share with everybody listening, two things, is Mike, who's going to come on the phone next, he told me about a month back that I did too much, and I did. But, you know, I really felt that I was helping, but what I was doing is I was stopping the growing up process from happening, and you guys got sent off without knowing how to do laundry and all those things that were so important. So I'm asking people who are listening, you know, when your kids tell you they can't do something, it's not true. And that's what Mike tells me. You know, it's kind of manipulation to get you to do it. The bottom line is, they all need to learn how to take care of themselves.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I think that's one of the most important things, especially for kids that have attention deficit, that they learn how to take care of themselves before they leave the house,
mm-hmm.
so they feel comfortable. So what was the hardest part of dealing with and taking control of things in your life that seemed out of control?
I think prioritizing what things I needed to take control of and then starting the process of taking control of them.
Okay. So can you share with us a little bit about what were some of the things that were, you know, how did you prioritize and what was number one, number two?
I mean, I think it all started with wanting to go back to therapy and try to figure out meds.
Okay.
And that was kind of the beginning of it. Once I got that figured out, which took a while.
Yeah.
You know, I wanted to move on to just stuff that everybody wants to do, you know, exercising and eating right. And for people that have been trying to finishing school and, you know, all the normal stuff that everybody, when they're in a depression, kind of everything falls by the wayside.
Right. So, especially, yeah, depression. Yeah.
So I think really the first thing was figuring out the right meds.
Okay.
I mean.
Yeah. No, that makes sense.
Yeah.
But something that you said the other night at the support group, because Chris and Mike were home for Thanksgiving, they came to the support group on Wednesday night, and he said that this time around, because, you know, when you're bipolar, there are going to be ups and downs, especially with the meds, because your meds have to be adjusted. And this time around, in finding the right antidepressant,
mm-hmm.
to help with the dysthymia, what you recognized was that it's not about the pill as Go ahead, can you talk about that?
Yeah. This time around, when I got back on the Prozac, I realized that I was going to have to meet the Prozac in the middle, and I was really going to not have, you know, it work the same way if I wasn't helping it out. So I had to change my diet 100%. I had to start going to the gym again, and I had to do everything that I could do to get my body in a place where it could actually work the Prozac into my system.
Right. And do you notice that being off sugar helps a lot?
Oh, yeah.
Sugar and see, a lot of people laugh about that because they say it doesn't make a difference, but I'm sorry, I beg to differ.
Uh-huh.
I think processed sugar for anybody, whether you're ADD or not, is probably one of the worst things.
It's not natural.
No.
No, yeah.
It's not good. And especially if you're on stimulant medication.
Yeah.
And you're eating sugar.
It's just,
yeah.
Medications are serious. I mean, you know, we're in this country, we take them like it's nothing. But if you're putting that kind of stuff in your body and you're not healthy, there's no point.
So would it have been better, you know, it was difficult when you and Mike were little because, and I think that a lot of it was the fact that I realized that you guys weren't happy in the situation that we were in.
Mm-hmm.
So I would let you eat a lot of, you know, sugar.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, the cereal and the Pop-Tarts.
McDonald's
and pizza and all that stuff.
Not to say it wasn't good at the time.
But what would you, if you, okay, so you're older now, you're 26, and, you know, you're not getting married anytime soon, although you do have a sweet, lovely girlfriend. what would you do as a father now if you had a young child who most likely, we better live near each other, your kids are going to be ADD or have ADD. And what would you do? How would you present that to them?
I really do enjoy the approach that you take from it now in terms of not making it a big deal. I mean, it's making it a good thing.
Right.
I think that's great.
Right.
And I wish that's kind of how it was, you know, when I was younger. But,
right.
Yeah, there's a very good chance my kid's going to be ADD.
Right. It's going to be fun.
Yeah.
We're going to have a lot of fun. But let me just say, in terms of food, like...
Oh, my God. I don't ever want my kids to eat fast food ever. I don't even want them to know what candy is.
That's what I was going to say.
Yeah.
But if you go to too much...
Oh, but you, I know. And then that's the thing. You can't... If you take
what are you
going to
do at Halloween, you know?
Yeah, well, if you take it to the extreme, they're just going to rebel and eat candy all the time.
So are you think you're going to spend the time to explain it to them?
Yes.
Okay.
Of course.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so, but, so let me know how that goes, because when they start pushing back, you know, because they're going to be really smart.
Well, that's
just like you.
Send them to your house.
Right, yeah, and I'll talk to him. I'll probably spoil him and then send him back home.
You'll probably give him all the candy.
No, but I'm just saying, see, the producer's laughing. It's funny when the producer's laughing. No, I'm just saying that I think for all of us, you know, we all have these visions of grandeur of how, you know, our life's going to be
right.
How we're going to raise our kids and everything's just going to be perfect. And then you have this child that is just, you know, so bright. Because we are just the brightest people. I'm sorry for all those linear and progressive people that are listening. You're not the brightest people out there. We are so bright because we're a member of the elite population.
Mm-hmm.
And so you have kids that, like, will, you know, give you a run for your money.
Mm-hmm.
So my thing with parents is just really trying to talk to them. And like you just said, you know, it's not going to be perfection. It's not going to be like they're never going to eat candy.
Right.
But I think if we could all learn, like, middle of the road.
Oh, yeah.
Because we love extremes.
Well, I think if you can get a kid to just at least, like, understand and comprehend the reasons why sugar is not good for them or anything.
Right.
Then that should be enough.
Right. Well, we hope.
Yeah.
But, I mean, it's a good way to start.
Yeah.
It really is. And I think that, I think, you know, taking that, you know, direction with kids and spending the extra time. See, I think what happens is everybody's so busy, and then you come home and you're dealing with a child who not only has attention deficit but has oppositional defiant,
right.
And you're exhausted. You're walking through the door.
Yep.
And the kid's going crazy,
mm-hmm.
and screaming and the whole thing. And, you know, I remember that I did try to help you when you would come home and you were coming down off the meds,
mm-hmm.
I did try to tell you, hey, if you want to go upstairs, I don't know if you remember this, and just chill out for 30 minutes whatever.
Yeah, I totally remember that.
Yeah, you want to do, because I did recognize, because I was on meds at the time too, that there was that rebound period.
Right.
Where if you are diagnosed with oppositional defiant, which, you know, I don't really understand that whole thing, but if you are diagnosed with that, then when you come down off the stimulant, it's only going to get worse.
Oh, yeah.
Because you really get frustrated and angry and, you know, you feel...
It's bad. I mean, your body is coming down off a chemical.
Exactly.
You know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And a lot of times, you know, for some people, it's not an issue. I have a little boy who's 5 years old, and I don't understand why he's on meds at five.
Because, that's crazy.
Yeah, I thought it was seven and up. But, hey, I'm not the doctor, so.
Mm.
But anyway, he actually is doing very well, so well that he's actually sleeping better, too. So, I don't know. You know, it's just so strange.
Everyone's different.
Because everybody is absolutely different.
Mm.
But one of the things that you did help me with when you were nine, and I think Mike was six or seven, probably six, is I remember one day being late one day to pick you up from school, and you and Mike were sitting on the curb waiting for me. And you got into the van, and you said to me, "Can I tell you how it makes me feel when you're late?" And I said, "Yeah, go ahead." You said, "It makes me feel like I don't matter." And if you can recall, that was the last time I was late, because that really hit me hard when you said that to me. So you weren't the only person I wasn't late for. It was everything else, mm-hmm. because I realized that by being late, I was making people feel like they just didn't matter.
Right.
You know, whether I was going to see clients, God forbid, or, you know, just meeting friends for lunch, mm-hmm. or picking you guys up from school, I recognized that it really hurt you. So that's another thing. Growing up with a mother who was ADD, was that hard at times?
I mean, yeah, it was fun. It was fun, though, you know? I mean, I think growing up with a mom who was ADD and a stepdad who wasn't was what was hard.
Because he was very critical.
And very non-understanding.
He had very low frustration tolerance. I'm not so sure he was an ADD.
I don't know.
You know? I do know he was narcissistic, so, you know, that didn't add to the whole thing, but didn't help with everything. But he also wanted things done a certain way.
Mm-hmm.
And when they weren't done the way he said, then it was wrong to us.
Yeah, and I mean, this is just brings it back to your whole topic of would it have been easier for me to, you know, mature as into an adult with ADD if I would have been coming home to a household that was more understanding and accepting of what I was going through.
Right,
so,
exactly.
Yeah, having someone that wants you to be on this regimented,
oh,
you know,
please
schedule,
say that.
It's just, oh, my God.
Please say that, because that's so important, because I have so many parents that really believe that if they put their kids on this incredibly regimented schedule, and then there's criticism in that.
Yeah.
Because you're going to fail.
Well, yeah, you're just setting them up for failure.
Right. And if they fail and you criticize them, then how is their life going to be better for that?
Well, yeah, and then when they leave the house, they're just going to go crazy.
Right. And so let me ask you this, too. The structure is important,
mm-hmm.
right?
Definitely.
Okay. But the way he wanted it done, that was about him.
Mm-hmm.
That wasn't about anybody else but him. And that's what really hurt everybody else in the family. Because I remember in the mornings coming downstairs and being in a fog,
mm-hmm.
and looking in the pantry and having him come and smack me in the head and say, "Take your happy pills,"
mm-hmm.
you know, which everybody would laugh about, but it wasn't funny because it was really a put down.
Mm-hmm.
And that was difficult, because when somebody puts you in that position, then you're feeling like you always have to run after them to make them feel better.
Everything he set up for us was not set up for success.
Right. So that he could look better.
Exactly.
Yeah. So you know, I mean, and for anybody who's dealing with something like that, whether it's a father or a mother out there who feels like everything has to be done to the point exact,
mm-hmm.
it's not going to work.
Well, yeah, and that's about them.
Absolutely. And
yeah.
See, but the kid, unfortunately, the little child.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Who's dealing with this. You know, I have a couple of clients who's really rigid in how they deal with their kids and has absolutely no understanding of what is happening in the creative mindset.
Right.
You know, because when you talk about the gift, and you growing up were so incredibly creative, your writing ability, you know, you were into photography for a while,
mm-hmm.
you wanted to be a director, and all that was just that vision that you had from the creative mindset,
mm-hmm.
which was just so amazing. So would you mention a little bit about mindfulness and how that has really helped you? Because I think that's so important for people with ADD and bipolar.
Yeah. I think any way to calm your mind is great for people with ADD.
Right.
And I think it's something that's really easily understood by people with ADD because they are so creative and almost out there, that the whole idea of mindfulness and a lot of the stuff they'll teach you in Buddhist philosophy, it's really easy to understand for people with ADD because it's just so, it's such a creative.
Exactly.
You know,
right.
Outlet.
Right. So the whole idea of staying in the moment.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because our minds are always going 100 miles a second.
Right.
So being able to stay in the moment is huge.
And when you're in the moment, you can remember things. Like, where's my keys?
Right,
where's my phone?
Yeah.
Where's my which is really kind of cool when you think about it, because for years we were all, I was putting my keys in the refrigerator and trying to figure out for hours where they were. One morning with Mike, I was looking for my keys, calling Ken in China. Now, that was really obnoxious.
Uh-huh.
You know, where's my keys? He's in China.
Right.
How's he going to find them?
Right.
And Mike pointed that out to me, like, Mom, what are you doing?
Mm-hmm.
You know? So, I mean, all that mindfulness stuff really has helped me where I don't lose my keys. You know, God bless Steve for hanging up the keychain over there. So we put him at the door.
That's the best.
Yeah, and my phone's always behind, you know, next to my bed, and I look for it before I leave the house. So, but I'm mindful. I'm more, like, focused. I'm not all over the place, you know, even without medication.
Uh-huh.
It's a lot better. But the whole idea for people who have never done it, so The Untethered Soul is a powerful book, but now you're reading another book by Byron Katie.
Mm-hmm.
And what's the name of it?
Loving What Is.
Are you into it at all?
I started it.
Yeah. Is it pretty good?
It's pretty awesome.
Yeah. So I think and that was kind of a starting place.
It's all about the moment. It's all about separating thoughts and feelings and how to bring yourself out of that.
Right.
It's really cool.
Which is great. So
yeah.
For those of you who want to get a good book, that might be something for you to pick up
mm-hmm.
too. So I'm really happy that for a while you were actually in a group for mindfulness.
Yeah, I was.
Yeah. How was that?
That was cool. It was really funny. It was a group of guys who were all ex-drug addicts. It was a mindfulness relapse prevention course.
Wow.
So it was all these guys that came there to try and get themselves to a place where when they started feeling like they wanted to use, they could bring themselves out of it on their own.
Wow.
So it was cool.
Like an AA group?
Kind of, but not, I mean, there was no title on it. And nobody knew that I wasn't a drug addict.
Wow.
I just kind of went along with it.
Wow.
Just to,
were they using meth or?
I don't know. I think everything.
Okay.
And, yeah.
Okay.
So yeah, it was really interesting to be a part of, but it really gave me a good insight into some good tools to use for, you know, whenever I got into a place where I just couldn't bring myself to a stable point, like in my mind.
Right. Because
yeah.
That's what happens sometimes.
Right. Yeah.
And especially, can you catch now when you feel yourself getting manic?
Yeah. I mean, I can. I was really good at it. When I was in the mindfulness class, and just because I was practicing that stuff every day.
Right.
But yeah. Definitely. When I start to get manic or when I start to get depressed, I can notice it right away.
Okay.
And see, before I was diagnosed with bipolar, I never would have went to a place where like, oh, I'm going through a manic episode. It was just kind of like, I would just ride it out.
Okay.
You know, it'd be great.
So what do you do? Do you up the meds when you get to a manic episode? What do you do? Do you call the psychiatrist or how do you handle that?
I just work through it on my own.
Oh, you do?
Yeah, it's easier to deal with when you know what's going on.
Okay.
You're more in control of it.
But this is interesting. So you're on Lamictal,
yep.
Which is a mood stabilizer, which has been great for you,
mm-hmm.
right? No, there's really no side effects except Stephen Johnson's, which my father had. Stephen Johnson syndrome, for those of you who are listening, can be a deadly thing that you can get from certain.
Yeah, no side effects. You can definitely die from it.
You can definitely die from it, yeah. But you have never gotten that.
No.
Well, if you're on Lamictal,
mm-hmm.
then you really shouldn't be getting.
Well, I don't. It's not anything extreme.
Okay.
It's just, you know, sometimes I'll just go through a few little waves of mania and then depression, but it's a lot more stable than it used to be.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Because I mean, I think there's people out there who may even be contemplating who are listening
mm-hmm.
whether or not. You know, it's a co-occurring disorder.
Oh, yeah.
With ADHD. And do they have it, you know?
Right.
And that's why I mentioned before about if you've put your child on an antidepressant and they get disinhibited on them, that could be a big red flag. I mean, I don't...
Yeah.
You know, I thought for years that we might be seeing this happen.
Yeah.
I was never really sure about that. So right now, you're in a great place, and I'm happy to see that. You're doing really well. You're working out, you're feeling good, and what about the gift? Do you believe it's a gift?
I think that ADD can be something really fun.
Yeah.
If you're in the right place to receive that. I just think more people should, I don't know, not have this negative connotation about it. Because it's, every getting diagnosed with something sounds so bad.
Right.
But it's really
what do you think about parents who tell me they don't want to tell their children what they have?
Well, I just think that's because parents just don't want to believe that their kids are imperfect or
right. Yeah.
You know.
Yeah. I think it's really important for kids to know.
Mm-hmm.
Because if you present it as a parent to a child that this is a gift, you're very creative, you're very special,
yep.
That is the way they take their cues from us, children do. So the way you deal with it, if you're not crying about it and you're excited about it, and, you know, the reason I put the book together, and I know you probably know this, but a lot of people don't that are listening, is a couple of years ago I was working independently with two different teenage guys. They were probably 15 or 16, and I noticed that they were starting to get depressed. And in, you know, coincidence, they both said to me, well, you know, this whole diagnosis of ADD, and that's when it just came to my head. Now, that's, you know, the creative mindset when I said, hey, guys, that Hollywood sign should say ADD land. Because,
mm-hmm.
Right, would there be a Hollywood if there wasn't ADD?
No, not at all.
So that, so much to me, and I'm sure there's a lot of people listening that are saying, oh, the last thing I want is my kid in Hollywood. Really? I mean, with all the wonderful things they can do, they
mm-hmm.
can write, they can do animation, they can do what Mike's doing,
mm-hmm.
you know, composition. These are all wonderful things that can happen for their kids, you know. And also in my book, we have entrepreneurs and writers and political figures, artists, painters, musicians. I mean, all these people that are in the book that you show your kids this book and they feel, wow, there's real hope for me out there.
Right.
You know. So I really appreciate you taking this time to talk to us. And I'm going to ask you to put your brother, we can't do three at a time, so I'm going to ask you to put your brother on
sure. So
we can talk to him. Thanks, Chris.
Yeah, yeah.
Really appreciate it.
Yeah.
I love you.
Love you, too.
Okay.
Here you go.
Hey, Mike.
Hi.
How you doing?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm good.
Thanks for having me.
You're welcome. And thank you for the music.
What do we got, 13 minutes left?
No. We have 45 minutes.
Oh, okay.
This goes to 5:30.
I see. Okay, so I was going to say.
Yeah, okay.
Lack of time management on a podcast run by ADD people, you know. I could have seen that coming.
Yes, Mike is also a comedian. He's very funny. So if you know him, it's difficult sometimes for you with people, right?
Yeah.
Okay. So let's go to your childhood now.
Okay.
You just heard Chris talk about what it was like in our house.
Yeah.
And you kind of flew under the radar as a child.
Completely.
Yeah. Mike never had a consequence to speak of.
Well, I mean, the niche was filled.
The niche was filled. That's right. Chris kind of filled that niche.
We took on roles, very extreme roles, consistent with our personalities. We went to black and white.
That's exactly right. Yeah, we did. And the one thing I do want to mention, though, is that Chris and Mike are very close. They truly are. I did a lot of things wrong, but one of the things I did right is I never set up competition between the both of them. So I think that really helped them to stay close. And to feel good about. I know Chris is very, very proud of Mike, mm-hmm. and Mike's very proud of Chris. So Mike, you were diagnosed at the University of Michigan. Do you remember that lovely psychiatrist?
Which one was it?
The
Patel?
Yes, Patel, Dr. Patel.
What did she diagnose me with?
She diagnosed you with ADHD.
HD?
Yeah.
I don't remember that.
Yeah, ADHD, and she diagnosed inattentive type. See, it's ADHD, and there's the hyperactivity, impulsivity, and then there's ADHD, inattentive type. Mm-hmm. And that was why, for a while, we missed the diagnosis, even though in first grade, this is kind of what happened with Mike, which is pretty interesting. Mike was very talkative when he was a little boy, very talkative, very bright, very articulate. And then when he got to first grade, he stopped talking. He shut down. Do you remember that?
I remember talking a lot.
And then in first grade, who was your teacher? She was related to the guy from Aerosmith.
Yeah, Mrs. Blanchet or something.
Yeah, and she called us up one day. She was very concerned and said, Mike's just stopped. He's not talking.
Oh, really? I don't remember that.
Yeah, and so that's kind of when we started thinking about maybe there was something going on the autistic spectrum. We weren't really sure. So we tried you on some medications to kind of open you up, stimulant medications and stuff, but you never did well on stimulants at all.
No.
How'd they make you feel?
I don't remember them being very effective just in general.
I think they kind of flatlined you too.
Maybe.
More than you were, you know. So when we went to U of M, when we moved to Ann Arbor, I had you tested because I was concerned, and they came up with nonverbal learning disability. Okay, so for those of you who are listening, I'm going to explain that there's a spectrum of autism. And on the left side of the spectrum, the lowest side, is nonverbal learning disability. In the middle is Asperger's, and the other extreme is autism. So Mike had some of the symptoms, and that's where the shutting down, not talking came from, the symptoms of autistic. Right, Mike?
Mm-hmm.
What happened in fourth grade? You told me some kid told you talk too much or something? Wasn't there something you shared with me?
Yeah, that did happen.
Yeah, and you felt like that's what stopped you?
I don't know if it was that specifically, but I do remember that pretty clearly.
Was it because you felt embarrassed?
Yeah.
Okay. So after Mike was diagnosed, the one thing they did say is that he was going to probably, this is kind of scary, what the testing said was that he was profile of somebody that could commit suicide.
Really?
That's what the testing said.
I see you again. You're telling me all kinds of things I never heard before.
Yeah, I never said that. That's part of the reason why we'll get to what happened when you moved up to San Francisco, but that's part of the reason why I was worried about certain things. So we watched for depression a lot, and you did go in and out of depression. Not, you know, major depression, but like your brother, kind of a dysthymia, you know, where you would have to be on meds. And you could take antidepressants for a while.
Mm-hmm.
They seemed to open you up a little bit. You felt, I think, how did you feel on them?
I honestly don't remember. I don't know which one because there have been a lot of them, but something had a disinhibition effect, though. I don't remember which one it was.
Oh, I do. Chris does, too. Well, Butrin.
Yeah, probably.
You broke his video game.
Oh, yeah, among other things.
Yeah, we never – and Chris looked at me that day and said, Mom, get him off that medication.
Yeah, that was weird.
Because you had never acted like that before.
No.
That was so funny.
I was just wildly passive-aggressive.
Yes, very passive-aggressive. Were you angry at your brother through those years?
I'm clearly. I mean, that was just a weird thing to do. The weirdest part was that I scratched up the disc. But then after that, not content to have just ruined the disc, I put deodorant on it. I have no idea what I was thinking. I can't remember that moment in time. I have no idea why I did that.
And then you broke it.
No. No, no, no. I scratched it, I put deodorant on it, and then I put it back in the case.
And you tried to use it, and then it didn't work.
And he told me, like, I wouldn't have known if it wasn't for the deodorant. So I guess I wanted him to know or something, you know.
Wow. Why do you think you were angry at him?
I don't know. It's probably for stuff years ago. Because, I mean, we did the whole, you antagonized me a little bit when I was younger. And I guess I was just clinging to that.
Yeah. And he got a lot of attention.
Yeah.
Even though it was negative,
yeah.
He did get a lot of attention. Yeah. And you never looked for that. I mean, you didn't have to act out. You didn't act out that way.
I couldn't. Who can compete with that?
Right. Exactly. No, it's very true. Did you feel like you got enough attention or you did not?
Sorry. Yeah, I remember there was a time when I thought that, like, I didn't come to you guys with stuff because I felt like you guys didn't care. I don't know where I got that idea. And I don't feel that way now, but I remember feeling like that as a kid.
Really? I'm sorry.
I don't know. I think I tried to show you or somebody else something, and there was just no interest. So I thought, well, then I'll stop doing this.
I'm sorry, but I hate to say this. I don't think that was me.
I don't know who it was.
I think it might have been the other person in our life because I do remember getting overly excited when you kids would bring stuff to me. I think Chris can attest to that one. I would get overly excited when you would bring stuff to me. So I think we got, you know me, I take full responsibility for anything I did wrong, but I really do believe that there was that inability for Ken to get excited about anything unless it directly smacked him in the face. Mm-hmm. And that's because of the narcissism, mm-hmm. you know. But if I did that, I apologize.
That's
no,
okay.
I didn't.
Like I
you
said,
had never,
you know, I've no,
never said that to me before. I didn't know. No. I'm sorry about that. But you were extremely well behaved. I mean,
yes.
to an extreme, and it just
to
really
very
wasn't
much to an extreme. That was my role, like I said.
Yeah,
I was the good one.
So, but how was you heard Chris talk about his life and the family, and how do you think? What did you think of the family? Did you have the same opinion about Ken that he did and me and what happened and all that?
What did he say?
Well, he was talking about the fact that, you know, Ken was very critical and very too structured.
He never understood, and he didn't want to understand.
Right. Okay. And so I think that really hurt the family because, see, I enabled that, stuff. If I had really been strong enough, I would have been able, yes, to stand up. I'm not, just blaming, Okay. So I was just told by my producer to be careful with using people's names.
Yeah, and I was trying to
yeah,
use okay. gestures earlier, but
right.
we had to write it out.
Right, I got it. Okay. You know, a little ADD, what can I tell you? Anyway, so let's talk about high school for you.
Okay.
Making friends for you.
Yeah.
Was difficult.
Yes. Yes, it was. If I didn't get into the program, I don't know it wouldn't have been the same experience at all.
What program?
The Life from 205.
Oh, thank God, yes, that you got into that. In fact, I meant to bring that up. Chris was in that program as well. Chris was news director, and Mike ended up being producer. And one of the things that I wanted to say to people who are listening, when you find out that your kid has attention deficit disorder and you know they're creative, I think the best thing that happened was you guys getting involved in Live from 205 in high school really helped you stay on the straight and narrow terms of, I'm not talking about, the other stuff. I mean, in terms of grades, because
well,
Vela, he wanted C's or better.
Yeah, and I mean.
What?
Yeah, he did. Yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, I think that's a way sometimes for kids to do better in school without the parents having to be on top of them all the time. And, you talk about motivation. There is absolutely no chance of internal motivation without autonomy.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're constantly trying to run your kids' lives, tell them what to do, standing over them with a hammer, how was school, how was school, how was school.
With a hammer?
Yeah, It's not a real hammer, Mike.
I
see, everybody?
No, I understand.
We're talking about the black and white
No.
Yes.
I know that.
Yeah.
I've never heard that metaphor.
Well, you know how kids come home from school and the only thing they get asked is, how was school? So what could you say? Fine. What I tell parents to do now is when they see their kids is say, okay, what was the most exciting thing that happened today? I think it's a much better question to ask.
Yeah, depending on the age.
Right. And yeah, I know. I mean, I wouldn't do that as a junior in high school.
Yeah,
but still,
I mean,
you could think of something better to say to them.
You could, yeah.
Right? Then how was school or did you hand in your homework?
Yeah.
See, because one of the things that I always said to you guys before you left for school was, school is what you do. It is not
who
you are. And that's something I really try to tell the parents I work with, because you really want your kids to understand that what's in here is very different than what they're getting in school.
Right.
And A's doesn't make you a good person.
No.
Although
you can be a good person and get A's. I've seen it. You can be a very bad person to get A's, too. I've seen that as well.
I have seen that, too, because you get A's, and you're a very good person.
Oh, I thought you were going the other way.
No. You're very funny, too. But you struggled Why does that make you upset when I say you're funny? You are funny.
No, let's keep going.
Okay. Okay. All right. So you made it out of high school.
I did, just
you had
barely,
a 3.5.
Just barely. And my counselor was of no help whatsoever in me just barely getting out of high school. And I mean,
barely? You had a 3.5 index.
Yes, but I wouldn't have graduated if I hadn't passed my English class.
Oh.
And one of the people giving me my grade on my senior project was my counselor. And she gave me by far the lowest grade of the panel.
Why did she do that?
I have no idea. And then, well, I probably shouldn't talk about this, but...
Why? No, go ahead.
And then she changed the overall score later. She's like, let's just say you got this. And I don't know why she didn't just give me a good score to begin with.
All right. Well, we can't talk names, but otherwise we'll have to go find her and talk to her. No, I'm only kidding. That's a long time behind you. Okay. So you were not ODD growing up at all. No oppositional defiant here.
I did not give you any opposition. I gave you nothing but cooperation for better or worse.
I know. Yeah. And you had a lot of sugar, which wasn't good.
No, it wasn't good. I was never very thin.
No, but you were never
I always had big legs.
Okay, but you were never fat.
I was noticed in elementary school when I was in gym class. I was like, my thighs are bigger than everybody
but
else.
But that's okay. That's a good thing. There's nothing wrong with that. So you started to get interested in music when we lived in Ann Arbor.
Yeah, in fourth grade they trotted out the, the underfunded arsenal of instruments, and they said, pick one. And I tried the violin, and it just wasn't quite working.
I didn't know you tried the violin.
So I was like, I like this in theory, but is there something bigger? And so then, we went to the cello, and I was like, yeah, exactly.
Cello works really well for you. And by the way, the Midwest has the best music programs of all.
I am very poor evidence of that.
Why?
I'm a horrible cellist.
Okay, but I even gave you private lessons when we moved here, and you were in the orchestra.
I wasn't ready for them.
No, but you were in the orchestra.
I was.
Yes, you are. And so you decided when you left for college, and here's the story, Mike goes off to San Francisco, and his brother wasn't up there yet, so you were up there by yourself.
Yep.
We brought him up, dropped him off, and he was an art major, right? Illustration?
Illustration.
Okay. And the classes were, like, horrendous, like 5 hours or something?
Yeah, 5-6 hours, something like that.
Of just looking at a model?
Yeah,
right?
looking at naked people, basically.
Naked people. No, but he told me after a while it just, like, really got old. So he probably in October called me up one night and said to me, I'm thinking about killing myself. And I said, okay. You said you're dreaming about it, right?
Yeah, I think
okay.
That.
And then I said, bring me into the real world. How would you do that? And he said, with pills. Remember?
Yeah, that
okay.
sounds about right.
And so I went up. Oh, I was so scared because I kept thinking back to the testing that he had done.
Yeah, and again, I knew nothing about that.
Right. But actually, it was really the medication that he was on that was causing these thoughts, and the fact that he was overwhelmed. He was in a program that he decided wasn't working for him. He wasn't making friends. He didn't have any roommates, right?
Yeah, I had roommates.
I thought that they didn't show up, or you...
Well, one of them didn't, but...
Oh, you had a guy, your roommate, that guy that I met. Did he have Asperger's?
I mean, not officially.
Yeah, okay. But anyway, so, yes, yeah, so the two of you together. And I went up there and got you off, we took you off the medication, right? Or put you on a different
well,
one?
I took me off the medication.
That's right, you did, and you came home. And
I just stopped taking it entirely. Just
right.
No, I didn't wean off or anything, I just stopped.
And then we didn't get you into therapy the following year, I guess?
Yeah.
Because we couldn't find anybody that you really liked?
Yeah, and we ended up at the...
Oh,
Center for Integral Studies.
That's right, and you did
with the graduate students.
And you liked her.
The first one, I was just distracted by her arm socks, so I couldn't really get any work done. But then we changed, and the next woman was, she was all right. And then she left, and then there was a guy, he looked like Mark Ruffalo.
Oh, I like him.
I know you do.
Yeah.
And we would have just prolonged periods of silence, just staring at each other, and be like, is this uncomfortable for you? And I'd be like, yeah.
Oh, see, he was an intern. He didn't know what he was doing. Okay,
I
got it.
Can I record this?
He's probably very Freudian. Okay. So, but then finally we got you this great therapist who you see now.
Yeah.
Who is really helping a lot, right?
Uh-huh.
The only thing, okay, let's go back for a minute. So you dropped, semester was a wash.
I dropped illustration.
Yeah, it was a wash.
Wash, completely.
You just, yeah, okay.
Everything.
Then you went into music the second semester and you just took off. Things were great.
Killed it.
You killed it. You've been killing it ever since. You love it. Composition.
Composition. The only one who calls it that.
What is it called?
I don't know.
Scoring for media or what is it?
Sure.
Whatever. Anyway, and so he's learning how to compose for music, television, and video games, correct?
I'm learning how to compose for music.
I mean, I'm sorry. Learning how to compose
for music.
For movies, television, and video games,
yes,
correct?
Exactly.
Okay. And you're loving that.
It's great.
Yes. And you're very good at it, too.
I'm getting there.
Right. Now, you're very good at it. You really are. And I think you're going to do extremely well in your life.
Hopefully.
Because you're happy with that. So one of the things that Mike struggles with a lot is anxiety.
Yeah.
Okay. You want to talk about that a little bit?
In what capacity?
Well, how does it manifest itself?
I mean, physically, I get adrenaline rushes at inappropriate times.
Okay.
Things that would seem mundane to people, like, trigger my flight or fight response, basically.
Like what?
Like when I was working in that office at my school, like every time the phone rang, it was an emergency. And I had to let it ring for a while and just like mentally prepare myself before I picked up the phone and put it to my ear, which is, I don't think is a typical experience. Maybe,
no, but
maybe it is. I don't know.
But here's the thing though. And I think you understand this is being on the autistic spectrum,
mm-hmm.
even though it's not something that, you know, is very serious because it's nonverbal learning disability, you worry about those social interactions.
Right.
The first ones are not easy for you.
Mm-hmm.
Is that true?
Yeah.
Okay. So when you have to answer the phone and you may not know exactly what to do,
right.
that can cause anxiety.
Exactly.
Right. And so that the other thing is sometimes panic attacks.
Yeah.
The other thing is sometimes illnesses that are real but are really related to stress.
Maybe. I don't
yeah.
know.
And so, you know, and Mike sometimes, too, can read certain things and then kind of call me up. And what was it that day you called me up and told me you had every personality disorder in the DSM?
I didn't say that. It didn't sound like a,
except
like
for
a,
narcissism. Do you remember that?
All I was saying was I took a test for percentages. It gives you percentages for all the personality disorders, and I was just telling you what the highest ones were. Because, I mean, everybody's going to get
something. Schizoid affective and...
It was paranoid and dependent, I think.
Okay. Yeah, well, you don't have them, so...
No, I know that.
Yeah. Yeah. Why did you take the test?
Why? Out of curiosity. Why not?
Okay.
It doesn't take long.
Take it. I should probably take it. You're right. But they're probably. But my personality disorder is out of the DSM now, so it doesn't matter. You know.
They threw you out.
They threw me out. They gave me a bye. Anyway, so so besides the anxiety, now you've been going to see a therapist who has helped you with a lot of things. But what about for you? The whole mindful piece of this. It's a struggle.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's a struggle partly because I don't know if I completely understand the concept yet. Maybe when I get a better understanding of it.
See, but it's, as Chris said before, it can be very creative. the whole Buddhist outlook on life.
Yeah, I don't understand what that means.
Oh, maybe that's why you're missing this whole thing.
I think that's a big part of it.
Yeah, and maybe if
not
we got you
what
into
it is.
To understand more about that, it might be easier for you to embrace this. Because I know that you're very literal.
Very.
Very black and white.
Yes.
So it would be hard because this is a kind of gray area.
Yeah, you would be surprised at how hard it is to apply concepts that you don't have an understanding of.
Yes, I understand. But I'll tell you what, it took me a long time to really be able to understand, it's a question, really be able to understand the whole concepts of mindfulness. Uh-huh. So once you said to me regarding new things, whenever I think I don't want to do that, you say to yourself, I don't want to do that, it means that I must do it. Remember that time you said this to me, that one of the things that you've gotten better with in therapy is you've been saying to yourself when you don't want to do something,
like if you didn't want
to go up and say hi to somebody or...
Well, let's not get too crazy.
Okay, if you didn't want to go do your laundry, if you didn't want to go food shopping, if you didn't, you talk to people. Now, you have a beautiful girlfriend, too, by the way. Both my boys.
I do.
I must have done something right because they both have really great girlfriends. So, okay. Is that true, though? I mean, is that a mantra that you have?
Yeah, I don't know if I call it a mantra, but it's something that I've been trying to do. And I mean, you know, obviously, because at first I had it like, I have to do things that I don't want to do. And you have to narrow that down because, you know, I don't want to fall into a ditch. Doesn't mean I have to do it. But, but yeah, it's...
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah,
yes.
things like going to the laundromat or going to the Hawaiian place to order food.
There's a Hawaiian place in the Mission?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. I didn't know that.
Or going to Safeway or...
Okay. Getting things done that you say you're going to get done. So for both of you, even though Chris isn't on the phone, he's sitting over here, you guys are really in control, I think, of the negative symptoms of ADD. Like, you guys don't lose things.
No, I really don't.
It's amazing, okay? I mean,
actually,
I'm really impressed.
He didn't do it in a very good way, but the unnamed gentleman that you used to be married to, that was one of the things that he helped me with. Not in the best possible way, but I did forget and lose things before he pounded it into my head that I shouldn't be doing that.
Okay. Did you find that too, Chris? Well, did you get that from him? Or?
I just don't like losing things.
Yeah, I know. Which is great.
But,
which is really great.
Like my keys and stuff.
Right.
And, you know, that was a whole fiasco.
But the other thing I'm really impressed of is you're on time.
I'm early to everything.
It's amazing.
I'm early to absolutely everything.
I mean, so ladies and gentlemen, those of you listening to this is incredible stuff.
At least half an hour.
For people who are more adult into the ADD world.
My teachers hate me.
Is it, why? Because you get there early?
I just sit there.
This is amazing. It's really incredible stuff that you guys are able to do this. Speaks a lot to who you are, okay? So what about procrastination?
Oh, all the time.
Okay.
I did it last night when we were out here, we watched, I didn't want to be out here watching 3 Johnny Carson DVDs, but I had work to do, so it became really interesting.
So that's what you were doing. You were procrastinating.
Yeah.
But Mike, you have close to having straight A's in school, so you do get your work in.
Yes.
Okay.
Get in.
Chris, procrastination. Do you do that?
Yeah.
A lot.
I'm better than I used to be with it, but I still do it.
Okay. So here's the thing. Here's what I do. When that thought comes in my head, I need to do something, but I can't do it. What I do is I don't engage in the thought. I just notice it, and I stand up, literally, physically stand up and shake it off and sit down and get done what I have to get done, you know? What about focusing? You guys okay focusing?
I find myself sometimes with reading, I find
drift.
Myself just kind of, you know, not really taking in the information, just kind of glossing over words.
Okay.
And then I have to go back and...
Do both of you hyper-focus?
Yeah, I'm sure, yeah.
Yeah. See, I never did that. It's interesting. I don't get caught up in hyper-focusing. I don't know why, but I don't. A lot of people do with ADD. Emotional regulation. How are you both with that? That's a big one with ADD and bipolar.
What does that mean exactly?
So the ability to regulate an emotion that comes up. So for us, when something negative, a feeling of negativity comes up, it's like a tidal wave comes over us. And so it's hard for us to, like, how do you get out of a wave when it comes over you, right? It's crazy. It's very hard to do. So being able to regulate a negative emotion that comes up, because this is a disability of regulation. That is really what it is. So when you're feeling angry or hurt or sad, how do you deal with that?
Lately, I've been trying to just deal with it through exposure. Like, let's say I was upset about maybe I got a lower grade than I wanted on a paper, and they wrote some criticisms that really, you know, got to me. And sometimes I'll just read it over and over again until
it's very good.
Until it's not
exposure therapy is huge. But what I noticed too about things that happened with you is the other night when we were talking about a certain person being a Scientologist, your need to be right at times can be extreme.
Yeah, I mean, when it comes to facts or things. Like, I don't force my opinion on people, but if I, you know, I do have a reverence for things that are objectively true.
Do you understand, though? The intensity of it is not good.
Intensity?
Yeah, it was very intense.
I honestly didn't
yes,
know
Yes, he
that.
Is. No, he's not. No, he's not. Yes.
I didn't know I was doing that.
Yeah. Well, it's good to get your mother around to point it out, because
yeah.
I can help you.
Yeah, you can.
With those things. Yeah. So do you, Chris, your emotional regulation, how do you deal with that? Like if something, you get hurt or you get angry or you get sad, like do you get back in somebody's face right away or can you take it down? I mean, do you feel the need to be right? Mm-hmm. What do you do about that? And where does that go?
I got to take a step back. I mean, stems from when I was a kid.
Yeah.
Always needed to be right. But now I just have to take a step back and just think, I don't know, if this, I'll have to really double check.
Should we give him a phone or?
No, it's okay. They can hear him.
Oh,
I'm
okay.
Sure they can, yeah.
No, for me, it's just about just taking a second now.
Okay. So, I mean, because if you think about it, like, is it that important to ruin relationships over being right?
Yes.
You're not serious.
No,
because it's really, it's not. If you think about it, especially people that you really care about, it's about you. You know, we were talking before about your ex-stepfather. It was about him,
mm-hmm.
Right? Well, if that's causing troubles in relationships that need to be right, it's really about you.
Yeah, I mean, you have to pick your battles. I mean, I was going to go into something, but it's not necessary. But, yeah, pick your battles.
Wait, what were you going to go into?
I mean, like, getting an actor's name wrong and, you know, denying the Holocaust. You need to have a scale. Like, you can't.
Okay, wait, who denied the Holocaust?
No, I'm saying that's on the extreme end of the spectrum.
Oh.
Where you should be like, wait a minute. But, I mean, you know, little things you can let go because that can just... You just annoy people.
Exactly. I have to tell you that is probably one of the single biggest things with me in interpersonal relationships with people that drive me crazy is I tend to get names wrong. You know that.
Yeah, and I don't think I say anything anymore.
Sometimes, but you know, I mean, even besides names, there may be, like, when I repeat things that you say, when I don't get it exactly right, it drives you
crazy. I wouldn't be such a big deal if you just...
It drives you crazy.
Sometimes you make me sound like a psychopath.
Do I really?
Yeah, you really do.
Okay,
You change things that I'm sure you think are subtle. But they really, really have a big impact.
I'll make sure I keep an eye on that.
I think sometimes, like, is that how you see me? Like, is this your experience of me?
No, maybe I try to make things that you say funnier.
Okay, well, let's...
Than they are.
Let's not take so much license with my life, and then...
I promise. From now on, I'll be careful about that. I promise. I hope everybody that's listening can see that how much I enjoy my kids. They're wonderful kids. We have a lot of fun together. I don't think we argue anymore about anything because I'm not controlling. So I don't try to control aspects of your life that I shouldn't be involved in. The one thing that I do worry about is safety issues where you're going to hopefully move in with your brother and you guys are going to be closer to downtown is going to help me.
Where there's no crime.
It's going to help me to sleep better.
I need to get into that. You guys have that magic shield in the Richmond. I need to get in there.
No, but Chris is going to get out of the Richmond district and you and he and Kevin are going to move downtown, and I'm excited about that. That's the only area that I have to tell you worries me when I know...
What area?
Safety issues.
Oh. Sorry.
And it's only because I'm, you know, in L.A. and you guys are up in San Francisco, and you've done great, both of you, of taking care of yourself. Amazing. Chris is doing two jobs. You're going to school. You know, and your classes are long and hard classes. They're not your typical college classes. No, they're longer than most classes.
True.
And you're taking 15 credits this semester. You'll be out, hopefully in a year, you'll be graduated, which is great.
Yeah.
And Chris is going to go on to Berkeley and going to be happy and healthy people, which I'm really excited about that. Adults, you are adults already, and you're doing very well.
Yeah.
And I really do enjoy. I enjoyed this weekend. We had a great time together. Thanksgiving was great. I thank you so much for coming to my group the other night and being a part of my podcast because I'm sure people...
Shout out to Barry.
Shout out to Barry, yes. And I'm sure that people would really love to hear this interaction that we have. And, you know, I respect the both of you tremendously for everything that you've been through and for everything you've accomplished. I respect you. And, you know, you are a tribute to me. I mean, it's just, it's amazing. It truly is. So, you know, I want to thank you for doing everything that you do. You're very supportive when I call you up and tell you things like my book's on Amazon,
yeah,
which is very exciting.
Maybe let's cool it on the emails.
Poor Mike, because my husband was sending out press releases on the book, and I think Mike got 6 of them. He's like, you know, 1 would have been enough, but I got 5 more. I don't know why you get so many of them, but
I don't know.
We didn't check that out.
I'm the lab rat.
Well, you're probably the lab rat. So, Mike, anything else about, you know, your life that, you know, ADD-wise that, or NLD that you could help people with by, you know, talk to the parents out there. Tell them things that they could do better with their kids, especially on the autistic spectrum.
Yeah, you were good because you explained. Do you remember when I was a little kid? I didn't know how to interact with people. Like
right.
you helped me learn how to fake it, basically. Which it's necessary. Like, because people would tell me jokes, and if I didn't think they were funny, I just would stonewall them. And you'd be like, you can't do that. People are going to think you're weird.
Right. And the other thing I remember helping you with is, do you remember the day you came home from middle school and you were all upset because you thought your English teacher hated you? So I put you back in the car and we drove back up to school and we saw your English teacher and I said, do you hate Mike? And she said, absolutely not. Because nonverbal learning disability, you can misread facial expressions, social cues.
Yeah, I don't really get body language. The only reason that at least I don't intuit it. Like the only reason I know anything about it is because other people have told me. But I feel like that's a more natural thing for people. Like, and I also don't understand how my body language comes across to people. Like I'll have my arms crossed a lot, or I'll slouch and sometimes I need to be reminded of
right.
that sends messages to people.
Right. No, and it's very true, because what Mike's going to go into in the music world, you know, you're going to be dealing with a lot of strap yourself in. And it's going to be, at times, you know, it may be difficult. But one of the other things that I think is important that I did when you were a kid, and I didn't have to do this for Chris, but I did do this for you, is I would get involved in getting friends over. Do you remember? Yeah. Like when we moved to New Jersey and when we moved to Ann Arbor, we moved to California, I was also always calling the parents and saying, hey, can so-and-so come over and watch video games, and I'd get a pizza. And
yeah, we'd watch video games for hours.
I mean, play video games, you know, Mr. Exact over here. But was that helpful?
Oh, yeah, I couldn't do that.
Right, okay. And
I'd get on the phone, and, you know, my hands are shaking. And
I was sorry about that. But once the friends were over, then it was easier for you.
It's easier, yeah. And then you gotta figure out what to do with these kids. I mean,
yeah. But you had fun.
But yeah.
You really did. You had a good time. I mean, I remember it was really fun.
Yeah.
We got Steve laughing. It's very funny. So okay, I can't look at this how fast this goes. It's 5:27 already. So we only have 3 minutes left. And what I wanted to take this time to do is again to thank you guys for being on. And also to talk about next week, I'm going to have Jenna Knight on. She's an ADD coach from the Boston area, and we haven't decided yet what the topic's going to be, but I'm sure we're going to have some fun. She's really, really good at what she does. She's, I think, has an e-book that's coming out for Christmas, and she's all over Facebook. I mean, you can, you know, she talks a lot to people and posts a lot of different things.
How many likes does she have?
I don't know. I haven't checked her page. I don't even know if she has a page. I'll have to ask her. But she's going to be on, so that's going to be fun. And then the week after that, we're going to have Alan Brown on from ADD Crusher, and he's going to be talking a lot with me about mindfulness. Crusher? Is that what you're talking about? What is ADD crusher?
Do you mean that he's, like, crushing ADD?
Crushing the symptoms, yeah. He's.
Okay.
He told me when he was diagnosed.
He's crushing your gift.
Yeah, the negative symptoms, not the gift. If you crush the negative symptoms that you have, then you have the gift, right? And so before we sign off, Mikey, is this a gift to you?
It has advantages. I mean, I know why you say that. I appreciate it for marketing purposes, but I don't know if...
Okay, ladies and gentlemen, there you have NLD at its finest. Okay, no, but truly, you wouldn't be creative if you didn't have it.
Is that true?
Absolutely.
If you say so.
Yeah, so that's exactly right. I hope everybody has enjoyed this show as much as I have and Mike and Chris have. So I will be signing off. Again, don't forget the support group on Wednesday nights at the Center for Learning Unlimited. 2785 Pacific Coast Highway, 7:30 to 9. And if you want to buy my book, please go on to Amazon.com or my website. And yes, ADD is truly a gift, because those of us who have it, population, we're very smart.
Careful with that language.
Very, very creative. And it's not a marketing
next
tool.
Week.
I'm going to sign off, and I will see all of you or talk to all of you next week.
All right.
Okay? And remember, everybody, if you want to get better, stay in the moment, okay? I'm going to listen to Mike's music at the end. Stay on while it's on.
This is surreal.
Here we come.